This is made without blemishes sometimes. So here we go. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Bhutaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So today we have a reasonably simple sutta without blemishes, Amangana, and it's specifically given to a group of monks, new monks as they say in that time. And the Buddha was staying at Jetavana and other Pindika's park. The monks were usually well looked after, and so sometimes people would come into the Sangha, become monks, and sometimes they'd be a bit lazy and have lots of defilements. And so this is about what we call the defilements of the mind. Sometimes we call them the kilesa, or here we call the angana. And these are just what stop one being at peace, what stop one being free, what stop one being enlightened. So these are what we call blemishes. And we're starting off by seeing that the most important thing is actually to notice if there is one in there at all, if there's any blemishes. And the only way you notice there is some in there, you can actually do something about it. And otherwise, that sometimes the one will miss the path. And it finishes off with just some of the concerns which are specific to bhikkhus, mostly to do with pride. So even though the last part of Without Blemishes is specifically to the bhikkhus, still you can understand just how, whether it's in the kitchen or whether it's in the lay world, some of that pride is how these blemishes are manifest in the world. And so it gives you also, the last part, an indication of what was happening in the monasteries in the time of the Buddha. And one of the nice things when they have a little bit of anecdotes about what was happening in those monasteries in the time of the Buddha, you see that people don't change after 2500 years. Still the same stupid ideas of wanting to be the best and wanting to get the best. They're still around today as they were 2500 years ago. So this is the Anangana Sutta. A little bit of simple Dhamma, but also it should, even though it's simple to understand, it doesn't mean it's not profound. And also, it shows you just a window into the time of the Buddha. So thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One, the Buddha, never actually calls him the Buddha, he always says the Blessed One, the Bhagavan. And just as an aside, the Bhagavan, that was actually how the Buddha was usually addressed. When that was repeated for many people, especially on the old Silk Route, when it got to Georgia, which is not Georgia, United States, but Georgia in the Middle East, that word, Bhagavan, became pronounced Jehoshaphat. The Bhagavan, the V's became into the V's, Phat. And from Bhagavad got Jehoshaphat. And it, because there was an old manuscript found a long time ago in a Christian monastery in Georgia, in the Caucasus, where that Saint Jehoshaphat, he was one of these amazing Christian saints, who lived in India. And Saint Jehoshaphat's story was that he was a prince. And one day he was walking outside the palace when he saw an old man, a sick man, a dead man, and a holy man. And seeing that, he completely converted to Christianity and became a holy man, and also converted the whole of India to Christianity. And that was the story of Saint Jehoshaphat. And until about 20 years ago, he was one of the Catholic Church had a saint for every day of the year. And his state's day was about in November sometime. Until the Catholic Church, the Pope, realized for about 2,000 years they were worshipping the Buddha one day a year. Because it became quite clear that Saint Jehoshaphat was Bhagavan, the Buddha. And it just because the story had changed over in telling from Bhagavan to Jehoshaphat, and from converting India to being Buddhist to converting India to being Christian. And so that was the story of Saint Jehoshaphat. So that's actually how people knew the Buddha. They wouldn't say the Buddha, they say the Bhagavan. The Blessed One. So that's just a little aside. Thus have I heard, on one occasion, a blessed one was living at Sarvati in Jeta's Grove and Atapindika's Park. There the Venerable Sariputta addressed amongst us, friends, bhikkhus. Friend, they replied, the Venerable Sariputta said this. Now, first of all, put your attention to the fact not all of these sutras were spoken by the Buddha. Most of them were spoken by the Buddha. The others sought mostly by Sariputta, sometimes by other monks. They're very important conversations which obviously the Buddha would approve of. So they're not all sayings of the Buddha. There's also sayings of the senior monks at that time. So Sariputta, friends, there are these four kinds of persons found existing in the world. And now you can see a very constant way of teaching the Dharma, the four kinds of this, the three types of that, the seven types of something else. And so this was like a way they would teach Dharma in those days, by putting into lists. And you can understand why they did this, because these sutras, they weren't written down in books, but they were remembered. And so when we say, you know, the Eightfold Path, and you think, I know seven of them, I'm missing one. So it actually helps you remember, there has to be eight of the Eightfold Path, there has to be the ten of the Akusala Karma Pathas or whatever. So by having a list, it actually made it easier for people to remember. That's why they always have the four of this and the three of that. Friends are these four kinds of persons found existing in the world. What for? Here some person with a blemish does not understand it as it actually is. Thus, I have a blemish in myself. Here some person with a blemish understands it as it actually is. Thus, I do have a blemish in myself. Here some person with no blemish does not understand it as it actually is. I have no blemish in myself. And here some person with no blemish understands it as it actually is thus. I have no blemish in myself. So if any of you studied maths, you know that those are the four permutations. And you've got, a lot of times this is a way of teaching Dharma, they get a statement and they do all the possible combinations and permutations to go through the whole lot. And when that gets into things like the Abhidhamma, the combinations and permutations set so great that sometimes that, you know, that I think it was one of Ajahn Sujata's monks worked out that one of the sutras, where is it? It's in the, what's the last sutra? The last collection of the Abhidharma called, I'm forgetting now.
Patana.
Sorry?
Patana.
The Patana, that's right, the Patana. In that collection, there is one section which has got so many permutations, they worked out with a calculator that it would take about 200 years, you know, at fast speech to say them all. And this is sort of thing which monks do in their spare time. So, you know, it's
24N.
24?
N to the 24.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's 24 causes and effects, so
okay.
All the relationships. If you
so that's
try to do it, it would be.
Yes, a lot.
A lot.
Yeah. So, it'll take forever. That's one of the reasons they say the Buddha can never recite that in before. But anyway, they always have this combination. This is a simple one. So I've got a blemish. So, now the first two, the person with a blemish. Herein, the person with a blemish who does not understand it as it actually is thus, I have a blemish in myself, is called the inferior of these two persons with a blemish. Herein, the person with a blemish who understands it as it actually is thus, I have a blemish in myself, is called the superior of these two persons with a blemish. Okay, let's see how much repetition is there. If it was in English, read that you say, of those two people with a blemish, the one who recognizes they have a blemish is the superior. So sometimes when we recite this, sometimes there's so much repetition. So get to understand that this is just for memory. And herein the person with no blemish, who does not understand it as it actually is thus, I have no blemish, is called the inferior of those two people with a blemish. And herein the person with no blemish who understands it as it actually is thus, I have no blemish, is called the superior of these two persons with no blemish. So obviously, if you've got a blemish, if you know you've got a blemish, you're superior if you don't know blemish. If you've got no blemish, you're superior if you know you've got no blemish. Obvious. But when this was said, the Venerable Mahamoggallana asked the Venerable Sariputta, friend Sariputta, what is the cause and reason why of these two persons with a blemish, who got one, why is one called inferior and why is one called a superior? And what is the reason of the two people with no blemish, the one is called the inferior and one is called the superior person. So he just wants him to embellish the blemish. Herein, then, when a person with a blemish does not understand it as it actually is thus, I have a blemish in myself, he can be expected, or can be expected, that he will not arouse zeal, make effort, or instigate energy to abandon that blemish, and that he will die with lust, hate, and delusion, with a blemish, with mind defiled. Suppose a bronze dish were brought from a shop or a smithy, covered with dirt and stains, and the owner neither used it, nor had it cleaned, but put it away in a dusty corner. Would the bronze dish thus get more defiled and stained later? Yes, friend. So too, friend, when a person with a blemish does not understand it as it actually is thus, I have a blemish in myself, it can be expected that he will die with mind defiled. So quite clear there that if you have got a blemish, and let's take it what the blemishes are, and that he will die with lust, hate, and delusion, with a blemish, with a mind defiled. Those are called the three kalesas, the three root causes of defilement. Here they have lust, hate, and delusion. It's lobha, dosa, moha. Sometimes they call lobha lust, but it's not just sexual lust. Sometimes they call it greed. What it truly is desire for happiness, satisfaction in the world of the five senses, which can be like lust for sexuality, it can be desire for food, it can be desire for property, for the beautiful dress, or the beautiful white pants if you're an anagarika and you're into designer anagarika clothing. Whatever it is which is happiness or desire of the five sense world, that is part of this thing we call lobha, here it's called lust. So it's much wider than the usual English meaning of the word lust. It's much wider than greed, which is usually for possessing things rather than just enjoying them. So it's halfway in between lust and greed. It's just sensual desire, but really of the five senses. And hate is not just hate, it's also irritation, ill will. Any degree of negativity is included in dosa. And delusion, again, this is my preferred word for moha or even avijja. Instead of ignorance, which was the original translation of this in the early days when people started to translate Pali into English, this was done by the scholars. And ignorance was when you hadn't gone to university, you hadn't read the books, when you weren't learned. And obviously, the wisdom of Buddhism is not something which you learn in a class in a lecture theatre. It's something which you learn through deep meditation, introspection, through insight. So understanding that ignorance is the wrong word, even illusion, I don't really like. Delusion is the best, because delusion means there is something real there, but you're giving it a meaning it doesn't really deserve. In the same way that seeing a rainbow, it's not an illusion, the rainbow is there. I can see a rainbow, you can see a rainbow, you can take a photo of a rainbow. But the delusion is thinking it's something solid, and it's located at a certain place. So you're giving a reality a meaning it doesn't deserve. So seeing a mirage is a delusion. It's not an illusion because it's real. It's a real physical effect. If you saw fairies at the bottom of your garden, that would be an illusion. You'd be drunk or you'd be mad because there's nothing really there. But seeing something which is there but giving it a meaning it doesn't deserve, that's what we mean by delusion. And obviously, the mind is there, but we give it a meaning which doesn't deserve, we say it's a self, a soul, a me. The will is there, you can actually witness the will, but we give it a meaning it doesn't deserve, we say it's my will, it comes from me. So all these things, that's what delusion is. Something which is real, we don't really understand it totally, and we give it a meaning it does not deserve. So those are the blemishes with the mind defiled. And you just see similarly here of the bronze dish, like a plate. If you got a new pot offered by, say, some of the nice Sri Lankan donors, and they offered it to the kitchen, and you neither used it or cleaned it, but you put it in a dirty part of the kitchen, and would it become cleaner? Of course it wouldn't. Fortunately, in this kitchen, everybody takes good care of the pots and pans. Just like in this monastery, everyone takes good care of their minds, I hope, so there's no blemishes, at least they're disappearing day by day. So that was the similar.
Yeah, I think that legally, that is that, I mean, what's the fuel of that? Is it inspiration and recognition?
Okay. Now this is, again, these are English words. It doesn't really quite fit the Pali words, because the person with zeal in English is called a zealot. And that has lots of bad meanings. They're like religious bigots and zealots and cause a lot of trouble here. So, what is it? I think it's atapi here. So atapi is, it is like an effort. It's just a will to do, actually to do something. Or actually that when you see the blemishes here, I was saying this to someone yesterday or this morning, the real will of right effort to actually abandon the blemishes is not a will to do something or get something, because that just feeds lust or hatred or ill will, negativity when you don't get what you want. It is the will to say no, to stop. It is the effort of a gardener to protect the tree, not the effort of a bricklayer to make a good wall. It's the effort to protect rather than to make. But that's not in the suit, that's something else. So it's also interesting here that if you neither used it nor had it clean, but put it away in the dusty corner, it's worthwhile pointing out that using the dish means you look after it and clean it. Same way, using your mind means that sometimes you can see those blemishes. So sometimes in the forest tradition they say, well, if you just meditate all day, sometimes you can't see all the blemishes. You're not using your mind. But if you have to work in the kitchen with other people and there's no food that day, or there's little food and you've got to quickly make some food and you're in stressful situations, when you're using your mind, then sometimes you can see the blemishes, and then once you see them, you do something about it. So to have the idea of using, just putting the dish in a dusty, in a corner, you know, it's not good enough. Even just cleaning it, using it as well, is important. So, the second one, and herein, when a person with a blemish understands it as it actually is, thus, I do have a blemish in myself, it can be expected that you will arouse zeal, effort, and instigate energy to abandon that blemish, and that you will die without lust, hatred, and delusion, without blemish, with mind undefiled. That means that he's an arahant. So without lust, hatred, and delusion, that's without the defilements, that's an arahant. Suppose a bronze dish were brought from a shop or a smithy, covered with dirt and stains, and the owner used it and had it clean, and did not put it in a dusty corner. Would the bronze dish thus get cleaner and brighter later on? Yes, friend. So too, friend, when a person with a blemish understands it as he actually is, that I do have a blemish in myself, it can be expected that he will die with mind undefiled. So if you understand what the defilements are, that's the first thing, to understand what